I wasn't going to say this, but I want to. I wasn't going to, but I am going to say it. That's what I'm going to say. That's what I'm trying to say. When Kevin and Diane first asked me that, hey, would you like to participate in our Labor Day meeting? You know, I said, well, sure. I'd like to know what you're talking about, what the topics are, you know, what is it all about? Well, we don't know. I said, okay, well, you know, we haven't really quite decided yet. Well, time went by, short time, and David Sims emailed me the information. I thought, oh, wow. Okay, and if you remember, I told you, wow, this is going to be a difficult subject. You know, this could be a difficult subject. And so I'm looking, and I'm looking at the schedule, and then I start writing. And it hasn't dawned on me yet. And I'm writing and writing, and I'm, you know, I've got my intro going, and all of a sudden it dawns on me. I get the schedule open, and I look at it again. And I look at all the people that are involved in the topics, in all the topics. And I realize that my lesson is, how does God punish laziness? And out of all those people that are on the list, in all those topics, I'm the only one that doesn't have a steady job. I am a carpenter by trade. And I thought to myself, who would do this to me on purpose? And I thought to myself that my mother just started coming back to this congregation, and she was probably the one that put them up to it. I get laid off when there's no work. I'm sorry. But mine is, my topic is about laziness, or how does God. As you notice, I am out of work at this time. It is sunny. The sign on my cabinet says, if you can't see it, it says, live better work. How ironic. These are some of my various things that I have built and have not finished. I'm just kidding, Mom. I know you don't feel that way. I know you know the way I am and my job and this and that. But, you know, we've heard a lot of sermons and discussions on the topic of instincts, animal instincts, human instincts, and whatnot. And I remember, as a father of one, and going into my second child being Casey, for them who do not know. And I thought by this time in my life, that I knew pretty well of how little children were. And I knew, and I felt in my heart, that a baby's instinct was to suckle to their mama. Is that an instinct that is natural? Is that an instinct for a human child to suckle to their mama? Not always. Not always. It is sometimes it's something that has to be forced upon them or taught. Here, take it. For 3 days, Casey would not take it. For 3 days, she did nothing but sleep and cry. Sleep and cry. I was a nervous wreck anyways, you know. I had to leave. But it was nighttime. It was the third day. I had to leave. I was out of here. I'm sick of this. I'm sick of being tired. You're not helping my child. Well, you know, I was an irrational father. So I left. It took me about 25 minutes to get home. And by the time I did get home, I received a phone call. John, she started eating. You know, it made me happy. It was a happy ending. Hooray. You know, now she won't stop. But anyways, in Proverbs chapter 22 and verse 6, it says, train up a child in the way that he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. Okay? Chapter 22 of Proverbs, in verse 15, it says, folly is bound in the heart of a child, and I like this part, but the rod of discipline will drive it far from him. Now, we didn't do this with Casey. This isn't how we made her suckle. But the fact is, the point that I am trying to make is that we as humans need to be taught. We need to have discipline. If we did not need to have discipline, if we did not need to be taught, God wouldn't have said it. He wouldn't have had it written down. So therefore, it is a necessity for us to be taught to do the right things of this life, to live the right way. In John chapter 9, verses 1 through 4, it says that, "Now as Jesus passed by, he saw a man who was blind from birth. His disciples asked him, saying, 'Rabbi, who sinned, this man or his parents, that he was born blind?' And Jesus answered and said, 'Neither this man nor his parents sinned, but that the works of God should be revealed in him.'" Verse 4 says, "I must work the works of him who sent me while it is day. The night is coming when no man can work." The thought process behind this is that this was the norm. That if you saw a lame man or if you saw a blind man, that he was like that because of something that his parents did, or something that his grandparents did, or his great-grandparents did, or somebody, you know, down the line. Okay, this was a norm. But of course, this wasn't the case. The reason that he was blind was for who? So Jesus could show that the power that he had was from God, so that he could show that that's where he was getting his power from. That's why the man was blind. And he did heal the man, and he was able to see for the very first time. In Exodus chapter 20, verses 5 through 6, it says, "You shall not bow down to them or worship them. For I am the Lord your God, I am a jealous God, punishing the children of the sins to the third and fourth generation who hate me." We just talked about that. Okay. We don't have this type of situation anymore. Where my descendants won't be punished for the sins that I will do today. It is not the case. But I do want to make a point here. There are biological consequences. The things that the people do to this day, the way that the communities are, the way that they live, that affects the community around them. That affects the youth around them. The lax environment can make a huge effect on moral values that are implanted in the mind of a child. A child's eyes are so bright. Their minds are like sponges. They soak up everything they see and everything that goes on around them. They need the example which can pattern their lives in a godly and pure fashion. They need to see that. Mankind can be so lazy, just like the animal kingdom can be so lazy, and we talked a little bit about that. There are those animals that sit around and wait for the opportunity. They wait to take the opportunity of those who have already accomplished something and take it on upon themselves. Do you know people like that? You know of people, or if you work with people that are like that, that sees the opportunity to take advantage of something that's already been accomplished, that something's already been done, that, hey, look what I did. The hyena will follow a lion or a lioness or a jaguar and wait till they have done their job. This lioness or jaguar may have spent hours and hours sneaking, doing his thing, you know, popping up, looking around. Okay, they're over there now. And they'll do hours of this, and they'll go around, and they'll finally make their kill. The hyenas will come in a pack and take it over. And when they're walking away with the prey, what are they doing? They're laughing. Again, do you know people that are like this? I work with a guy like this. That's why I'm talking on it. This is first-hand knowledge here. I'm telling you, I work with people, and there's a lot of guys that are like this. A lot of them in my trade. But the one thing, and I know this is a discussion, okay? This is supposed to be a discussion, and I want it to be a discussion, but I have a lot to say, okay? So if I don't make it in time, I'm really sorry, and we can sit down and discuss it. But no, seriously, I do want to discuss some of these things, but let me get through them because I have a lot to say. Okay, talking about this type of individual, I don't believe that this individual comes by this naturally. this type of individual who seeks out and devours its prey or takes from other people. I believe that it is from a learned experience. I believe it's from something that they have seen in their lifetime, or seen from their parents, or seen from their uncles and aunts, or somebody who they've been close to. I know of a guy from Pennsylvania, the guy I was talking about that I work with. He is vindictive. He is, he's a nice guy. I like him. He is a friend, because he doesn't bother me, so I don't let him bother me. But the guy has moral values, and these moral values were taught by those around him. And he says, I go, is everybody like that from where you're from? He goes, oh, yeah. He goes, oh, yeah. Don't turn your back. Don't do something to somebody and then turn your back, because they will get you someday. And I asked him, so why don't you move back to Pennsylvania, or why haven't you gone back? He says, because I'm afraid to. You know, you burn so many bridges. And he says there have been people that have been killed for stupid things down the road. They'll catch him in a store, or, hey, you remember you did that to me? And pow, you know, beat him up and stuff. And I said, wow, that's great. But what a way to live. And the whole society that he's from is like that. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, and verse 8, it says, but if anyone does not provide for his family, especially for those of his household, he is denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever. When the Lord created the first parents, in the beginning, he established certain things. Okay, he established the institution of marriage, of the house, of the protection, of the increase, and the stability. He created these things when he created the first family. Men were given the leadership role of the family. They were to provide for their family. And this isn't a new idea. Okay, it didn't stop with Adam. It didn't stop in the garden. It has continually gone through the times. Okay? Working and eating, what you have sown, has been taught from the very beginning with Adam's placement in the garden. Lord said, cultivate and keep it. All the way to the New Testament, where in Thessalonians, Paul says that if a man will not work, neither let him eat. Now, for the most part, okay, the men of this country, the men of this world have the realization, okay, listen, if I don't work, I'm not going to be able to have my house. I won't be able to feed my family. This is for the most part. I won't be able to have the nice things that I have. I will lose them. Or I won't even be able to purchase them, or become in debt to them. You know? If you don't work, you can't get these things in life. Now, that's for the majority. Now, there is a minority in this country, and I'm not talking about race, but I'm talking about there's a majority of the people, they elect to work, and they work, and they know what they're supposed to do. But there's a minority of the country who would rather live off of the others, who works hard. There's a majority of the country, there's a minority of the country that would rather, you know, hang on to the shirt tails and capitalize on those who break their backs. Okay? We have con men. We have beggars. We have panhandlers. We have some of our friends and some of our relatives and some of our brothers and sisters. Matthew chapter 5, verse 42. Can anybody recite that? Give him who asks you, and from him who wants to borrow from you, do not turn away. Okay? I'm sure that everybody feels that this, in general, this is a general rule for this type of situation, that it is better. It is better to give sometimes to an undeserving person than miss the opportunity to give to somebody who really deserves it. Does everybody understand that? Okay. But at the same time, I have a but with this, but at the same time, we have to be consistent with our duties to our families. We have to be this way. Hebrews chapter 13 and verse 2 says, "Do not forget to entertain strangers, for by doing so, some have wittingly entertained angels." Now this kind of brings up, you know, some mixed emotions here, right? So what do you do? What do you do? I mean, okay. Dennis said something to the effect that yesterday we were talking about Christians, and that the world who knows that you are a Christian, they're very critical of you, aren't they? They know how you should act. The beggars, the panhandlers, the con men, and people of the like know what our Christian values are. Do they live by those Christian values? These are the parasites that I'm talking about of this society that know how we are and how we believe and what we're taught. We are taught that it is better to give to an undeserving person just in case you miss the opportunity to give to one who really needs it. That is, it is better to give. The Lord said that it's better to give. Give to those. Be willing to give. 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 Okay, they know that. They know that. In 1 Timothy chapter 5, it says, "If you do not provide for your own, you have denied your faith, and you are worse than an unbeliever." The same goes for charity and the like. 2 Thessalonians chapter 3 and verse 10 says, "For even when we were with you, we gave you this rule. If a man will not eat, he shall not work." To me, to give to a person who is able to work, encourage their laziness. When we do this, we support their laziness by our back-breaking labor. I work hard, and I am no different than anyone else in this room. I work hard for my money, and we all do. The point being made in the Thessalonian letter was that if a person is hungry, you do what? You feed him. And if he wants any more than that, what do? You feed him, or you give him a job. Right, exactly. You give him a job, you give him something to do, and you pay him you pay him well for it. You pay him what he deserves for it. Exactly. You give them something to do. That if a widow, talking about widows, because I think they do need to be talked about, there are some widows that just can't take care of themselves, and they need cared for, and we're told to care for them. And by all means, we should. We should have no qualms about that. Or the sick, or the lame, or anyone of that nature, they should not go away empty-handed, by no means. And even when it comes to the poor and needy, though, there are times you have to kind of look back at yourself and you kind of have to judge. I don't know. I said it. You kind of have to judge whether or not they are deserving of it, and is it consistent with our duties to our families? Paul wrote in 1 Thessalonians letter, and I just touched on that briefly, but I'd like to look at it a little closer if you bear with me. In 2 Thessalonians chapter 3, verses 6 through 7, it says, "In the name of the Lord Jesus Christ, we command you, brothers, to keep away from every brother who is idle and does not live according to the teaching you receive from us. For you yourselves know how you ought to follow our example." The example being, look it, listen. Look at us, okay? Sorry. We could have leaned on you for financial support, but we didn't. We didn't choose to. Why? What does it say? Didn't want to be a burden to them, that they wanted to be the example. We as Christians have to set this example, okay? They wanted to be the example. He's telling them, listen, don't wait around for the second coming of Christ. Christ is going to come when God has deemed it time for Him to come again. Do not sit and wait for Him to come and sit idle and do nothing. You know, why should a man work and buy a home and buy a car, two cars and a half a garage, or a car or a big car, a garage and a car and a half, whatever you want to say, and then lose everything and then work for nothing because Jesus is going to come tomorrow? You know, the thing is that he's telling them, listen, get off your rear ends, go to work and do something, be productive, don't sit idle. He said something like this a little before, and this is the second time he's talking to him about it, and he's a little bit more sterner. We hear that some of you are idle. They are not busy like busybodies. Such people we command and urge in the Lord Jesus Christ to settle down and earn the bread that they eat. Verse 13 shows a little, okay, what I'm about to tell you is going to be okay. Verse 13 is kind of a little nudge. You know, this might sound a little funny or might sound a little harsh, but this is something that you need to do. Okay? Verse 14 says, if anyone does not obey our instruction in this letter, take a special note of him. Do not associate with him in order that he may feel ashamed. Yet do not regard him as an enemy, but warn him as a brother. You know, like I said, in verse 13, he's saying this, I'm going to tell you something. And it might be a little hard, but this is what you need to do. You need to withdraw from that brother. That brother will, because of his idleness, because we have told him, because it is in the Bible, states plainly, if you tell him and he doesn't change his ways, remove yourself from him. Don't associate with him. He is no longer a brother in Christ to you. Don't run after him. Don't go over to his house. Make him feel ashamed of what he is doing and what he has done. Idleness is not an appropriate Christian value. It has nothing to do with Christianity. Did Jesus just sit back in a chair or on a rock and say, you know, go. This is kind of what I want you to tell him and just do it. He didn't sit idle. He had a thing. He had a mission, and he had a short time to do it, and he took it all advantage, every advantage that he had, every waking hour he had to spread the gospel, to tell the news, to tell what God wanted him to say, to do what he had to do. He had a very short time to do it. Mankind is their own worst enemy. Always has been, always will be. 1 Corinthians chapter 3, 18 through 21 says, let no one deceive himself. If anyone among you seems to be wise at this age, let him become a fool. Let him become a fool, that he may become wise. For the wisdom of this world is foolishness with God. For it is written, He catches the wise in their own craftiness. And again, the Lord knows the thoughts of the wise, that they are futile. And therefore, let no one boast in men, for all things are yours. There are some who think they are sneaky. There are some that think they are crafty, that they think they are fooling everybody, but the only person that they're fooling is themselves. God knows the situation. God knows their hearts. He knows everybody. He knows everything. Which brings me to a story that I'd like to talk to you in Luke chapter 14, or 16, verses 1 through 4. Okay. Jesus told his disciples, there was a rich man whose manager was accused of wasting his possessions. So he called him and asked him, what's this I hear about you? Come here and give an account of your management, because you cannot be manager any longer. The manager said to himself in verse 3, what shall I do now? My master has taken my job away, and I'm not strong enough to dig, and I am ashamed to beg. There wasn't any remorse Did you hear any remorse in what I just read? There wasn't any remorse for what he had done. My mom told me, and my dad told me, when I did something wrong, and number one, I would do anything and say anything to get out of trouble. And number two is that you're not sorry for what you've done, John. We know you. You're sorry for being caught. Were they lying? For those who know me? No.
Is this a discussion now,
John? No. No. That's a good one, Ronnie. I was sorry I got caught. So was he. So was this person who he was talking about. So was his servant. He wasn't sorry. He didn't show any remorse. He didn't say, okay, all right, listen. All right, I know I've done wrong. Let me do anything that I can to repay you. Let me work it off. Let me, you know, I'll work for free. I'll do whatever I have to do. He didn't say that. What did he do? What did he do? You know, we've talked about instincts. We're talking about survival here now. Okay? Man's instinct is to survive, and then he is a survival. He is what I call a parasite. They're too lazy to make it on their own. And it's so much easier for them to capitalize on somebody else's goodness or somebody else's wealth, that they can live off of somebody else. It's a lot easier to do this. This is the way of the world. This is how many, many people are. This guy says that he couldn't dig. I think he could. What do you think? I think he could. Look at the wording. I think he could. The fact of it was that he wasn't about to lower himself. Number one, he had no remorse. Number two, he wasn't about to lower himself, lower his standards. He had a lightweight job. You know, I mean, what are the other jobs of his time, of his day? What did they do? You were either a dig. How did they plow the fields? You dug. You know, he wasn't about to do it. He was smart enough that he didn't have to do it. And he wasn't about to beg. Who were beggars? Yeah. It was a legitimate.
You didn't have any lamps, or you couldn't see.
Right. No, that's absolutely true. And he wasn't about to do that because, hello, the guy was able-bodied. He's just going to stand there and lean up against the gate. Hey, alms for the poor, you know, or whatever. Hey, can you help a buddy out? You know, he couldn't do that, okay? And he didn't want to dig. But we see this situation all the time in our lives, this type of individual. And you know what? It's a snowballing effect. Instead of leaning on God's wisdom, instead of leaning on God's principles or Christian principles, they lean on their own wisdom. Okay? And this person, what he did in the following verses was he took it upon himself to try to fix the situation. Instead of saying, you know what? Yeah, okay, I did it. I did it. I'm sorry, you know? Try the compassion route. I'm worthless, you know, this and that. No, what he did was something that was unscrupulous. Did I say that right? Somebody with no scruples. What he did, and what people in this world do to try to get out of situations, is that they will either lie about something to get out of it, or they will cheat. And if you lie about something, what does it lead to? Another lie to cover up the first lie to make it sound believable, right? The same way with cheating. It's the same exact way. It'll continue. It's a cycle. And it won't stop until the truth comes out. And then what happens? Where are you at? You're worse than started. You are a fool. You know, you got egg on your face. You look stupid. And but that's the way of the world. The fact is that we don't give an able-bodied person money to earn their keep. And I'm just so glad that we don't have this type of situation in our society today. We don't have beggars, do we? Because I don't know what I would do. I don't know. Luke chapter 16, verses 10 through 13. Whoever can be trusted with very little can also be trusted with much. And whoever is dishonest with very little will be dishonest with much. So if you have not been trustworthy in handling worldly wealth, which will trust you with true riches?